You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
January the 27th, 2021. This story coming right from the New York Attorney General that the New York Department of Health underreported COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes by as much as 50%. 50%. Cuomo, of course, had issued an order in March that nursing homes had to take and keep COVID-positive patients, and it led to a lot of deaths. We were never sure what the numbers were. The only numbers we had at one point, as of January today, they're claiming that 5,957 confirmed deaths, an additional 2,700 presumed deaths, which is apparently way above what they had officially reported, and I would venture to say we're going to find that number is small. I do know that New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio now demanding and calling out, I want the full truth. We have to make sense of this. We have to get the full truth. That's de Blasio. De Blasio and Cuomo do not get along very well at all. Don't forget Cuomo, in the midst of all this COVID crisis, released a book talking about how he handled the COVID crisis. Cuomo's going to have to do some answering. And Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of New York now demanding that the New York Attorney General and the U.S. Justice Department subpoena any information from Cuomo's administration on how he handled the coronavirus pandemic. She said this could prove that the governor and his entire team orchestrating a criminal cover-up and have blood on their hands. Well, of course, the Democrats want you to look somewhere else, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says, look what we have going on in Congress, in our Capitol. She said, we're going to need more money for members of Congress for additional security to protect us from what we saw happen January 6th. But she also said, our enemy is really inside the House. When asked, what do you mean by that? She said, well, it means we have members of Congress who want to bring guns on the floor and had threatened violence on other members of Congress. I don't know if any direct threat, I would imagine, had been called out or made public, but I haven't seen it. But yes, there are members of Congress, a Republican, who believe they should be able to carry guns on the floor of the House for their own protection and their Second Amendment right. But you also have AOC, Congresswoman AOC, claiming we have white supremacists in our Capitol. She said, you go into the House of Congress, the House of Representatives, and you will see them. They're seated on the GOP side. We're going to get into that in more detail. If you have a pet, you need to hear this story, especially if you have a dog. The FDA updating a recall notice. Pet food manufactured by Midwestern Pet Foods from Oklahoma. Apparently, more than 100 dogs have died, 200 falling sick after eating food from the company's Oklahoma plant. If you have any doubt, check your food, take it back to where you bought it, and get more details. General Motors stepping forward saying, we are going to commit to a major change. We are going to transition our entire fleet of light-duty vehicles to zero-emission powertrains by 2035. We're going to go all carbon neutral access across the country by 2040. If so, GM would become the first major legacy automaker to put a hard date on finalizing all electric vehicle lineup. And of course, they're encouraging others to follow. They might want to do research on the Edsel and how that went over moving forward. Oh, by the way, of course, while we've got the left constantly wiping out jobs by the executive pen of Joe Biden and the climate czar John Kerry claiming that this is good. We need to get rid of these oil fossil fuel jobs. Just a reminder, a small reminder, John Kerry still owns and uses his own private jet. You want another ride? Well, there's a New Jersey theme park that's going to open next year. I should say later this year, the world's tallest, longest, fastest single rail roller coaster, soaring 13 stories, flying up to 58 miles an hour. Wow. Oh, here's something that could be even more fun. Former Congressman or Representative Beto O'Rourke of Texas is going to run for the governor's office in 2022 in Texas. Well, that's going to be a blast. Can't wait to see how that goes.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I guess I grew up on an older road. A pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Until I found out that my brand new clothes are came secondhand from the rich kids next door. When I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream. Feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniels. Oh, number seven. Tennessee whiskey got me drinking in heaven. And
this is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
John Kerry, in that same news conference you put up, he said, well, they need to learn to make better choices. What an arrogant, out-of-touch statement. For a centimillionaire to say, you know, you little people, you know, I don't like the choices you're making, and so your jobs go away. As John Kerry said right there, quel surprise that the Democratic elites have decided that blue collar workers, that union members, that men and women with calluses on their hands. They've made the wrong choices, in John Kerry's words. Well, that is not a unifying message. It's not doing the job we should be doing, fighting for working men and women in this country.
Those are the words of Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Republican. And yes, I certainly applaud them and agree with them. My father worked in the oil fields. We lived in a trailer home, not a mobile home. It wasn't called a mobile home. It was a trailer home. He raised four of us. Eventually, we got out of the trailer home and actually into a brick home. But he worked in the oil field, and he worked hard, long hours. And some of my best memories are going with my father out to the oil field during the summer at night. He'd take me out. He was going to be there all night. And I'd sleep in the car listening to the rumble of Halliburton trucks pumping what they called mud into the hole to shore it up so he continued drilling, even getting to walk up to the doghouse up on the drilling floor, just off the drilling floor. No OSHA rules in preventing me from doing. The company didn't stop me. I'd go up there and sit in there with the men, and they'd be sitting around drinking coffee freshly brewed constantly, around a little heater if it was cold at night, which many nights it was. And those out on the floor whipping the chains, wrapping around the pipe, get it, screw it up, bring it up, drop another one in. They work hard and dangerous. More than one man I saw had realized too late you do not wear a wedding ring when you're on the drilling floor. You get caught in that chain, you lose your finger, if you're lucky, only your finger. But Joe Biden, with a stroke of his pen, is destroying these jobs, saying we don't need oil fields anymore. We don't need the Keystone Pipeline. I mean, this absolutely saying you're inconsequential going forward. Their thought is that we just won't need it, and they don't care. Well, we're not there yet, and we don't have jobs ready for these people as you cancel them out. Oh, Joe Biden and others and Kerry are saying, well, you could get a job building wind farms for us, or you could learn computer skills. And neither Biden nor Kerry have worked a day in their life at a real job, J-O-B, not doing politics, not getting daddy's inheritance or marrying somebody that has a ton of money, but actually working. And so those in the oil field industry, watching all this happen, that Joe Biden, with his stroke of his pen, canceling so many jobs out, Kerry's saying, these people that are out there, they've been misled. They're buying a lie that's not true. Listen to John Kerry explain how those of you who work in that industry or any related industry, or for that matter, any job, you're delusional.
Workers have been fed a false narrative. No surprise, right, for the last few years. They've been fed the notion that somehow dealing with climate is coming at their expense. No, it's not. What's happening to them is happening because of other market forces already taking place.
That is a bunch of BS. They're not losing their jobs because of other market forces. Oil and gas industry is thriving, and in this nation, we have become no longer dependent upon other nations because we are doing what we need to, going into shale fields, going into oil fields previously that we couldn't get anything, fracking and everything else, where we are now able to use our reservoir, our energy, until the Democrats come in and start saying we got to shut it all down because we want a cleaner environment. I want a clean environment for my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. I do. And yes, there will be some jobs lost as we move forward, but isn't it wiser to give a man another job before you kill the one he's working on then? I made the analogy in the earlier hour. I mean, you're telling somebody, you know, the house you're living in, we're going to have a better house for you in 30 years from now, so step out of the house, we're going to burn it down, and we'll have a new house for you in 30 years. We're supposed to wait? How are you going to do that? And John Kerry, who has his own private jet that leaves a bigger carbon footprint than your car will over a period of 20 years or more, is telling you how you should be living your life. And Joe Biden wants you also to know, listen, what I'm doing is not going to cost jobs, it's going to mean jobs. Listen to this.
When I think of climate change, I think of, and the answers to it, I think of jobs. A key plank of our Build Back Better recovery plan is building a modern, resilient climate infrastructure and clean energy future that will create millions of good-paying union jobs.
Right, but you just signed the other day to kill the pipeline, and you immediately wiped out 8,000 good union jobs. There's no foresight to say, let's get there and then we can close these down. Let's just close them down now. Joe Biden. Yeah, when I think of climate change, I think of jobs. But Senator Cruz says the left has its own view of what your job is worth compared to what their job or hobby is. Senator Cruz.
the nobility of the elitist left is they show how noble they are when they're willing to give away your job. Notice it's never their jobs they're giving away. It's never their Silicon Valley billionaire supporters. It's never Wall Street. It's never Hollywood. It's they're willing to give away someone else's job.
Yeah, your job. Your job. But again, and I'm going to use this quote against this woman over and over again. The climate advisor to Biden, Gina McCarthy. See, Kerry has a title, climate envoy, the envoy. Yes, the climate envoy who has his own jet. FAA shows his family has his private jet, a Gulfstream aerospace jet owned by, good name, Flying Squirrel. It was previously reported for Teresa Hines, Kerry's private charter jet company. According to FAA records, certification, good through 2023. And private jets estimated to emit 40 times as much carbon per passenger as commercial jets. And don't forget, when they wanted to build wind farms off the coast of the nation, that was all okay until they started putting them off Martha's Vineyard, where all the liberals live. Well, no, no, no. We don't want those things out there polluting our view of the ocean. So, again, the attitude is we're going to treat our own differently, and we're going to make the little people pay for it. Perfect example. I was quoting a moment ago, and I didn't finish the quote. Let me wrap it up for you. Climate advisor Gina McCarthy, despite Biden the other day by executive order killing the Keystone Pipeline, she said, the most exciting thing about this is we're not asking for sacrifice here. The president fully understands people are suffering now, so this is all about recovering from the COVID crisis. This is all about building good, clean jobs, jobs where you can get access to jobs, to good pay and unions. But you ain't got it now. She says it's investing in the infrastructure to get us clean electricity net zero by 2050. But you ain't got it now. And these people had a job until you wiped it out. CNN Chris Cuomo on Cuomo Prime Time was talking to Washington Governor Jay Inslee, who's all about praising Biden's climate actions. But I want you to listen to the question that Chris Cuomo posed to the governor. Now, when you listen to this question, I'll tell you this, you're going to hear him basically set a case for, again, supporting Biden. I hope no one really looks at Cuomo and thinks he's a journalist. Some do. Some think, what a great journalist. When you ask this kind of question and the way you phrase it, you're not a journalist. You're carrying the water for the Democrats while you gently ask a question.
How do you finesse the aspect of the other party, which I believe is in a complete state of chaos? But on this, they got a great angle. Every time you do something that's green, you're taking green out of their pockets. Keystone Pipeline, costing jobs. No more drilling, costing jobs. Jobs matter more to people than the environment when you look at polls. How do you bridge that gap?
There's your question. And he said, I see the other party in chaos. But he said they have a great angle, because when you talk green, you're talking about green out of their pockets. Well, he's right about that. And he does list the Keystone Pipeline costing jobs. No more drilling costing jobs. Jobs, and again, he actually said the polls show that jobs matter more than the environment to people. No kidding. But he basically set it up because he knows what Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington State, how he's going to respond.
Listen, the other side wants to shackle people to a past of an area of declining jobs. This is a reality. We do not want to shackle our children to the dead weight of jobs that aren't going to exist 30 years from now. We want to give our kids the jobs that are growing. And this is the number one job creation engine is clean energy. And I couldn't be more tickled. Look, this is a hallelujah moment from my view. We've crossed the desert of denial and deception about climate change, and we have a president who understands how to create jobs, and he's doing that big time today.
Good God. We have crossed the desert of denial and deception about climate change. A president who understands how to create jobs, and he's doing that big time. Where did he sign anything that opened up a new job? Where? What executive order did he sign saying, take these people that I'm killing their jobs and give them a job? Where did he sign that? Did I overlook it? No, I didn't, because he didn't do it. They're killing jobs right now, but they're telling you, take one for the team. That's pretty much where it's going. Just want to make more people homeless, put them in the streets. That's the idea. That's where you're headed. No, Biden and all of those in there now, they are going to be like kids that got into the cookies and candy, and they're not going to stop. They're going to stuff themselves repeatedly. Oh, they're going to get sick a few times, but they'll continue stuffing themselves. You're the one who's going to have to come in and clean it up. And in the process, along the line, some of those who thought this was a good idea, who thought this was a good idea, are going to suddenly realize this was not a good idea. And then, of course, we still have those pushing to defund police. A couple mayors speaking out about the danger that's going to create. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Obviously, all of us have just watched in horror as the violence and destruction has taken over the city of Portland. And quite frankly, this is what the defund the police movement looks like. We have Mayor Ted Wheeler, who one week is punched in the face by a citizen. And then just earlier in a segment on this very show, he's put to having to pepper spray others. I mean, this is what a culture of criminality truly looks like. And the lack of consequences, unfortunately, just leads and incites more violence.
And it's pretty clear that's going to be the path forward as you defund police. And those are the words of the mayor of Sandy, Oregon, a Republican. He said, look what we've been seeing in Portland and Seattle. And he's talking about just since the Biden inauguration. Yeah, they were ahead rioting, attacks on police, buildings, since Biden took the oath of office, the very night he did. And there were no responses from Joe Biden during that week. Finally, White House Press Secretary Psaki, when she continued to be pressed on the riots in Portland and Seattle, said President Biden, quote, condemns violence, supports peaceful protest, smashing windows, not protesting, and neither is looting. That was this week, this Monday, when she finally responded. When it was last Wednesday, he was sworn in and it took place. Let me ask a stupid question, occupying your time and your brain power with my stupid question. Do you think they would have let Trump survive that many days if there had been violence without raising the question? Larry, you're so stupid. You waste everybody's time with that question and yours as well. You're right. There's a mayor of El Cajon, California, also Republican, Bill Wells. He said this plan to defund police, we should be clearly seeing what's going to happen.
A couple of years ago, we had our own problem, but recently La Mesa, which is about 3 miles from us, had significant problems. A couple of bank buildings burned down, lots of violence, lots of cars turned over, lots of broken glass and burning. And so I think it bodes well for really taking a serious look at this whole defund the police movement. And in reality, understanding that going for less police is probably exactly the wrong direction to take.
Yeah, that would be understandable, wouldn't you think? Well, Dennis Weissman, in a piece he wrote and contributed to the Federalist, said, titled, "Defunding the Police Will Mean More Shootings, Higher Taxes, More Pain for the Poor." I don't have time to go through all of it, but he says, you look at the record number of law enforcement retirements over the past year, that's testament to the new reality. New York City, retirement's up 75%. This is because, obviously, police are being demonized constantly regardless of what they do, and you're going to give them less money. If you think you have problems with police officers now, which, yes, there are cases where you do, do you think paying less money is going to get you a better caliber of police officer? Someone who's willing to be better trained and will abide by the law better when they can't pay their rent and they're out there in the street policing? He also adds this, defunding law enforcement will not only cost more lives, increase crime, lower the overall standard of living, but disproportionately harm our poorest communities. The poorest will suffer. We'll take a break when we come back. AOC saying there are racists right here in Congress. Look at them. They have GOP flags. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Oh, oh, Lord, why have you forsaken?
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
That difference was that it really felt that last term, the Republican caucus was one of extreme fealty to Donald Trump. There were some that were true believers, others that simply remained quiet out of cowardice, and out of fear of the president's retribution. But this term, there are legitimate white supremacist sympathizers that sit at the heart and at the core of the Republican caucus in the House of Representatives.
Those are the words of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Congresswoman from New York, saying the difference between the prior Congress, the House Republicans, and this current Congress has been seated. They owe more their fealty to racism. She could have used the word loyalty, but she likes to throw the word around and show that as a former barista, she's also educated. That's fine. But she's saying what we have now is we have members of the GOP Congressional Caucus that are loyal to racist and racist ideas. And previously it might have been just to Trump, but now they're still in there, even though Trump's gone. This gets back to the heart of what many are saying. We got rid of Trump, now we need to get rid of the Trump supporters. That's going to be harder to cleanse them, to eradicate them, to re-educate them. Because you have a fealty for Trump, a loyalty, or at least some of the things he stood for. Or maybe your loyalty is just to this nation. No, she's convinced that right now it's a dangerous place for her to be in the Capitol. Do you realize she did not attend Joe Biden's inauguration? What? She was not there for the inauguration of Joe Biden? I mean, this historically big thing to get rid of Trump, and she did not go to the inauguration? Did you know that? And she has a reason as to why she didn't go. You know what her answer was? When they realized she was not there, she said, I didn't feel safe around my colleagues. I didn't feel safe around my colleagues. She told Chris Cuomo, I think we had some very real security concerns. We still don't feel safe around other members of Congress. Of course, she told me about what happened on the Capitol January 6th. Then we have the inauguration following that. And yes, there were 25,000 National Guard troops there, high fences barricaded with razor wire, but she still didn't feel safe in the midst of members of Congress. Why? Well, because you got 32 members of Congress who've written to the House leadership, to Nancy Pelosi, saying we're facing a significant uptick in threats of violence and even death. Now, they're not saying inside Congress, but what they are upset with is you've got some Republicans who don't like these gun detectors, metal detectors that have been installed after the January 6th riot, among them Congresswoman Lauren Boebert of Colorado, and also Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland, recently set off a metal detector trying to go into the House chamber carrying a pistol. So they say we're afraid they will shoot us because their loyalty is to racists. That's what they're peddling now. There's nothing that says the Democrats can't carry a gun. No one is saying only Republicans can carry a gun. Now, this is what someone decides on their own. And there may well be some Democrats who previously had carried. I don't know if they did or didn't. But when I hear a congresswoman say, I don't feel safe around my colleagues, and in the interview she was giving at that time on MSNBC, she also added that really if something goes wrong, the GOP really won't do anything about it.
There are no consequences in the Republican caucus for violence. There's no consequences for racism, no consequences for misogyny, no consequences for insurrection. And no consequences means that they condone it. It means that that silence is acceptance, and they want it because they know that it is a core animating political energy for them.
Well, let's go back in history briefly, not that far back to 2019 in March, when Congress was trying to come up with a resolution after what Congresswoman Omar had done. She had questioned the support that members of Congress were showing for Israel. At one point, she suggested they were bought off by Jewish money. And then she said members of Congress are basically have dual alliances, not so much for our nation, but as much as for Israel. I mean, in 2 months' time, back to back, she threw two different anti-Semitic remarks out there. So the freshman Democrat from Minnesota provoked rhetoric on Capitol Hill that maybe we need to deal with this because she's making all of us look like we agree with their anti-Semitism if we don't speak out. So they were going to come up with a resolution. Majority Leader Steny Hoyer at the time, a Democrat caucus chair, Hakeem Jeffries, did condemn questioning her as she questioned the loyalty of Jewish lawmakers, but they didn't mention her by name. And then they were rewriting this resolution. They're working on the language. All they had to write is, we will not be anti-Semitic. It's wrong. And name her out. You want to censor somebody? They should have censored her, but they didn't. When they ended up approving a resolution, 407-23, and yes, the 23 opposing were all Republican lawmakers, the resolution approved to condemn anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, racism, and other forms of bigotry, which those same Republicans agree with, but they didn't like the way it was being done by Congress at that point. The whole idea was to pass an anti-Semitic statement and condemn Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. But they didn't want to do that. They didn't name her in the resolution. They didn't do anything. They had debate, but she did not speak during the debate. And when it came around, they were just coming up with a resolution condemning anti-Muslim bigotry. Well, I'm in favor of that resolution, but why don't you name why you did it? And they didn't limit it just that. They decided to throw in not just anti-Semitic remarks, but they added anti-Muslim bigotry, racism, and other forms of bigotry. In other words, they had to kind of do a little swap and conceal. And they didn't bother calling her out. So when I hear AOC say, there are no consequences in the GOP for anybody who's racist. I don't see anybody on the left that's upset with anti-Semitic remarks and signing off on a resolution and censoring any member of the left for what they did at that time. No, AOC says, I see clearly within the GOP danger.
This is extremely dangerous, an extremely dangerous threshold that we have crossed, because we are now away from acting out of fealty to their president that they had in the Oval Office. And now we are talking about fealty to white supremacist organizations as a political tool. And for, you know, Republicans that are in that caucus that are unwilling to hold that accountable or to distance themselves from it, we really, really need to ask ourselves what they are evolving into.
Yeah.
Because this is no longer about a party of limited government. This is about something much more nefarious.
In her opinion. Riddle me this. You know there's a Congressional Black Caucus. Only black members can join. Now, does that suggest a racism that all those black members want to take out all the whites that exist in Congress and the nation? No, it does not. There's some that would say, well, if you accept AOC's argument that because they're not doing what she thinks they should do and they all kind of gather together, then they must be racist. Well, then you could. But that, you see, it's wrong. It's wrong on either side. You can't call someone out for that. The Black Caucus was meant to obviously help lift them up. I have complained about in the past and said, I don't know why you have it, but they have it. It's their decision. And not every member who's black has joined the caucus. And we have more black members than we did when it first started. There may have been some good that came out of it. Maybe not. But the bottom line is, do I say that it's a group that's fomenting violence against whites? Of course not. Of course, if you had, quote, a white caucus, that would be a shame, wouldn't it? And it would be condemned, as either group should be. But for her to say it's just extremely dangerous right now, we're talking about folks who have loyalty to something more nefarious. Well, the left is also moving forward to do what they can with our children, to indoctrinate them, to redirect them, to transform them in front of your very eyes, beginning with preschoolers. A plan to teach preschoolers about transgenderism. Preschoolers. Stand by, please.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Change, change, change. Change, change, change.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Joy Pullman is an executive editor of The Federalist. She describes herself as a happy wife, mother of six children. She's working on a book she's already had a previous book, Classic Books for Young Children. She's a Hillsdale College graduate, also authored The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids. And her next book is to How to Control the Internet So It Doesn't Control You. The piece she wrote for The Federalist, again with that background I wanted to share with you, is titled Small Town Iowa Public Schools Teach Preschoolers Transgenderism and Judging People by Skin Color. And the line under that title is, a Latino man is judged by the color of his skin, then dehumanized in racial terms, because of where he lives. And this is okay in America. using public tax dollars in public institutions. She's talking about that next week the Ames, Iowa Public School District is sponsoring a Black Lives Matter Week of Action that is apparently going to include teaching transgenderism to children as young as 4 years old. 4 years old. The school district's webpage about this week of action, slated for the 1st of Feb to the 5th, reprints things titled The Black Lives Matter at School Guiding Principles, which include, she points out, the following. Again, this is for preschoolers. 6, and it's written this way, this is the title as it appears in the Black Lives Matter at School Guiding Principles. Number 6, queer affirming. We're committed to fostering a queer-affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of thinking that all in the world are heterosexual unless he, she disclose otherwise. Number 7, trans-affirming. We're committed to embracing and making space for trans siblings to participate and lead. We're committed to being self-reflective and doing the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege. 11, Black Villages. We're committed to disrupting the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another and especially our children to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. Well, I'm not comfortable with anyone other than me raising my kids. What about you? The school district has additional recommended lessons for middle and high school students. And in one of the things that they show, they deal with the Trayvon Martin. It's called Justice for Trayvon Martin Toolkit. Discuss George Zimmerman and his internalized racism, how even though he is Latino, why he is labeled as white. And said he has a light skin color. Holds no Spanish name, so Zimmerman is so whitewashed and consumed by white supremacy, that is why he is white. And then he goes on in the toolkit to say this campaign directly targets a prison industrial complex that supports draconian drug policies, immigrant detention, and the school-to-prison pipeline. There's a coloring page, by the way, for children linked in the school district curriculum. And the stereotyped image that's put there, let me describe it to you. It would look like maybe someone from the Bahamas or maybe Africa, apparently a black person by the way the hair is structured and drawn with big lips, I should add. And they've got a tambourine or a drum in front of them. They're barefoot and they're playing on the drum. I can't tell if it's a man or a woman. It doesn't make any difference to them. But she says, we want children to be encouraged to think of black people as drummers wearing ragged jungle clothing and bare feet. She said, if the New York Times published this picture as an editorial cartoon or article illustration, street agitators would lose their minds. And yet this is part of the curriculum they're presenting to these children. I take offense at this picture. I mean, it is a stereotype. I mean, you could not do more than what you've done if you're trying to stereotype race. She says in her piece that we are no longer in Martin Luther King Jr.'s vicinity with race issues. We are in a much, much darker place. She points out the population of Ames is 62,000. School district has about 5,000 students, spends about $13,000 per student per year. 80% of the Ames pre-K through 12 are white, 80%, 10% Asian, 4% Hispanic, 3% black. Said the difference is that Ames is a home of Iowa State University and several federal agency outposts, and appears most parents of the school-aged children are white professionals with college degrees, the typical woke profile. 79% are married. And dealing with these children, they think, is a way to reach out. This creates diversity. This helps better our children, better relations. Somebody's got to be held to account on it. I hope in Ames, Iowa, there's such an outcry that they make more noise about it. You heard about it here. I give Joy Pullman again credit for bringing it to my attention. One nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.